लोकाधिपति सहम्पति कथाञ्जलिनति वरमया च
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I thought I'd begin the morning teachings with just reflection from the Buddha concerning mindfulness of the body, mindfulness directed to the body. And this is from the Numerical Discourses. It said, even as one who encompasses with their mind the mighty ocean, includes thereby all the rivulets that run into the ocean. Just so, O monks, whoever develops and cultivates mindfulness directed to the body, includes thereby all the wholesome states that partake of supreme knowledge. One thing, O monks, if developed and cultivated, leads to a strong sense of urgency, to great benefit, great security from bondage, to mindfulness and clear comprehension, to the attainment of vision and knowledge, to a pleasant dwelling in this very life, to the realization of the fruit of knowledge and liberation. What is that thing? It is mindfulness directed to the body. If one thing, O monks, is developed and cultivated, the body is calmed, the mind is calmed, discursive thoughts are quietened, and all wholesome states that partake of supreme knowledge reach fullness of development. What is that one thing? It is mindfulness directed to the body. If one thing, O monks, is developed and cultivated, ignorance is abandoned, supreme knowledge arises, delusion of self is given up, the underlying tendencies are eliminated, and the fetters are discarded. What is that one thing? It is mindfulness directed to the body. So those are, I think, very useful reflections, because the theme of this retreat is supposed to be metta, loving kindness, but it's essential to have an anchor and to have a very stable base foundation to work from. It doesn't, and sometimes trying to direct attention to a mental state or an emotion it's like trying to grab the wind or something. It slips right out of your fingers. But having a good grounding in that quality of mindfulness that is focused on the body, then you've got an anchor to be building from, and then what arises out of that is, as the Buddha said, all of these wholesome qualities arise out of that mindfulness directed to the body. Once you've got a stable base, then you've got a foundation for build these wholesome mental states, and you've got a continuity for them to stand on. So that that cultivation of mindfulness of the body, even if we are doing metta as a meditation, you still need to have an anchor. You still need to be grounded in something and have some place to keep returning to. So that becoming very familiar with that returning to the body, that, and there's many ways of using the mindfulness of the body, but certainly the in terms of meditation and the formal practice of our sort of meditation technique to becoming familiar with the mindfulness of breathing and a attention brought to just the breathing process, to sitting and then paying attention to the breath coming into the body, the sensation of the breath as it touches the tip of the nose, as it passes through the nasal passages, the back of the throat, down into the chest, the abdomen rising, breathing out, the abdomen falling, sensation in the body, the chest area, throat, tip of the nose, the breath going out. So that tuning into the rhythm of the breath, and then just not forcing the breath, not trying to regulate the breath, but just attending to the breath as you're experiencing it. There's an easy tendency for us to try to regulate it, or try to oversee it, or try to maintain it in some way. But that sort of adding an extra layer of complication, that's not really, not at all necessary. Unless you're dead, you're going to be breathing. So it happens anyway. So just to be able to tune into the breath and allow that sense of relaxing into the breathing, and also that recognition that, I mean, the breathing takes place within the whole sphere of the body. You're sitting here, and you're breathing, but it isn't as if it's sort of a nose suspended in space somewhere. I mean, you've got the rest of your body sitting here. How are you holding it? What does it feel like? Is it comfortable? Is it not comfortable? Does it feel spacious? Does it feel contracted? What does the body feel like? Is there some tension in the face, in the shoulders? Is it relaxed? Can you soften that? What does it feel like in the area of the abdomen? Just to relax the abdomen, and just allowing the body to. I mean, it's quite interesting that the more comfortable we are with breathing and relaxing and settling, and as we continue to do that, our posture actually gets better. It just is, it's a natural feel. That's what feels balanced. You don't need to be straining to hold the posture upright and making yourself sit up straight. You know, it's obvious to, obviously necessary to have some degree of trying to keep an upright posture. But if there's too much force or too much straining, then it gets uncomfortable to sit straight. But as you keep relaxing and keep softening and keep releasing tension, you find that quite naturally the body starts to line up quite nicely. And then it because that's actually the most comfortable way to sit for 3/4 of an hour, an hour, however long one sits meditation. That's the most natural way for the body to sit. One of the images that's actually helpful in sitting is just sort of imagining that there's a kind of a string or something at the top of one's head, and if one were just sort of dangling there from that, how would the spine and the shoulders and everything, how would it line up? It would all be lined up quite neatly, quite nice and straight, and there would be a balance there. That sense of that upright posture is one of comfort and ease as one continues to relax. But the core of it is the breathing. So that as one breathes in, to just allow the breath energy to suffuse the body. Just breathing in, allowing the as the breath comes in, sort of suffusing the body with a feeling of warmth, of energy. As the breath goes out, it's a sense of releasing, relaxing, settling. Non-clinging, not holding. It's, you can't hold on to a breath. I mean, you can hold on for maybe a minute tops, but you start turning blue. That's not very comfortable. but just that natural rhythm of the breath, suffusing the body with a sense of warmth and energy, and then as one breathes out, just allowing the body to feel suffused with a sense of relaxing, of letting go, releasing. In the same way that we breathe in and we breathe out, the air comes into the body. The air is expelled out of the body. It's released into the atmosphere, world around. In the same way, you know, thoughts, impressions, feelings, those can be, you know, they come into the mind, and just to allow them to go back out again, to release them, to let them go. Because the nature of, in the same way, the nature of the breath is just to come in and go out. It's the same thing with thoughts and feelings, memories, perceptions. These are it's the nature of the mind. But we don't have to hold on to that. We don't have to cling to it. We don't have to make anything of great importance out of it. It's just, okay, that's just a thought. It's just a memory. It comes into being, and one can let it go out again. And of course, thoughts and feelings and whatnot, those are, they're a lot more sticky than the breath. So it's helpful to just having the image of the breath, the feeling that the breath coming in and the breath going out, and then extrapolating that to the feelings, perceptions, memories, thoughts. They can come in, they can go out as well, and that's and then there's a releasing there, a spaciousness there, that is very, it's very relaxing, it's very settling, and the mind starts to become more clear, become more composed. It's quite natural. So in the same way that when we allow the breath to suffuse the body, allow it to energize, to warm it, there's a relaxation that comes in the body. So as we allow the mind to have its thoughts and feelings arise and cease as well, come in and go out as well, the mind and the heart relax as well. The mind, the heart is able to be more clear. So you don't force the mind to be still or force the mind to be clear, but it's through allowing it to the impressions in the mind to come in and go out without reacting, without clinging, without adding a commentary to it, then there's a natural clarity starts to arise, a natural spaciousness. So allowing that to happen, and it's an exercise that we need to remind ourselves to be doing, because sometimes we start meditation and we've meditated for years or however, and then it's very easy to get into a rut or get into a habit. We perceive ourselves in a certain way, we perceive our thoughts and feelings in certain ways, and then we take the bait. I remember Ajahn Chah one time saying that human beings are like fish, because a fisherman puts a hook out, got a bit of bait on it, and they go for it all the time. And then he said, well, actually, they're not like fish at all. He says, because fish only, when they take the bait, it only gets caught in their mouth. He said, they're more like frogs. He said, frogs, they swallow that hook and bait right down to the gut. I don't need to take the bait, because the bait is the feeling of liking and disliking, the feeling of oh, that's fearful, that's intimidating, oh wow, I really like that, I really want that, that's important, I can't let that one go. We take the bait. And that simple process of being able to attend very impartially, very clearly to something as simple as the breath coming in and the breath going out, you think, well, that, That's pretty basic. When am I going to get on to the real meditation? But the reality is that's what we really have to learn how to do. That ability to relate to the mind in a way, the mind, the world, the body, in a way that we're not getting caught in the reactions. And that's how the mind becomes settled, how the mind becomes clear. So that exercise of coming back to the breath, coming back to the posture, the body, how does it feel? Really starting from the top of the head and feeling, is there a sense of tension at the top of the head, the forehead? How can I relax that? Okay, what's it feel like around the eyes? How can I relax that? Can I soften that? Around the jaw, around the throat. Okay. And you're paying attention to that, and in recognizing, okay, there's breathing in, breathing out, and then just going down, okay, what's it feel like in the shoulders, in the arms? Are my arms comfortable? Where's a comfortable position for the arms so that we're not it's not holding them, just so that they can hang comfortably and the hands can be in a comfortable position. Okay, just relaxing, settling. Feeling the breath. Allowing that the breath to suffuse the body and soften, say, the area of the chest, allowing it to be open, spacious, not sort of contracting in on oneself. There, because we can, you can see that when you're sort of thinking about something or pondering or recollecting something that has a weight to it, sort of, head comes down, shoulders come in, chest is, it's trying to figure it all out. Just bring some space to it, soften it, relax, allow that as the breath comes in, the breath goes out, allowing it to be open, soft, spacious, in the abdomen. Just allowing that tension, not holding the abdomen, allowing the breath to come down into the abdomen. The sort of a full, as the breathing process, allowing it to affect the whole body, the whole trunk of the body. And finally comes breathing in. The abdomen expands, breathing out, it relaxes, comes down. And allowing if there's tension in the lower back, softening that, trying to get a balance where you're, it's holding one's posture by allowing the whole body, trunk of the body, to relax and then to be sort of balanced on one's cushion. It doesn't actually take muscle strength or oftentimes we people will complain of, my back hurts. My back hurts around the shoulder blades from all this sitting, and a lot of that pain is actually by trying to hold the posture using the, say, the chest or the upper back, up the shoulders, you're trying to hold the posture. And, it gets painful. But just relaxing and allow the body to the spine to rise up out of the pelvis. And say, well, that's what we have these bones for. They're a lot easier to look after than the muscles. You just let the muscles be do what they're going to do, and just relax them. We've got all the props. You know, we've got cushions. We've got zafus. Whatever else one needs to sort of get a balance, sense of posture. And just allow the muscles to relax. So then one is the posture is, one can relax into the posture. And then the breathing becomes much more natural. Allow the rhythm to be very natural, not forcing it. And then just paying attention. Is this a long breath? Is this a short breath? And is it comfortable? Is it not comfortable? You don't have to go into any more of a sort of analysis than that. Is the attending okay? That's soft. That's a bit hard. That's short. Long. Just sort of familiarizing oneself with the breath. That's the in-breath. That's the out-breath. And just attending to that. Mindfully aware of where you are in the present moment with the breathing process. Mindfully aware of the kind of general feeling of the body. Again, without going into a whole kind of analysis and commentary, it's just, okay, this is what it's feeling like. Does it need to be adjusted? Does it need to be adapted in any way so that it can be a bit more comfortable? And say that's enough. And then just sustaining the attention on the breath as a in-breath and an out-breath. Because, I mean, it's okay to adjust the posture a bit if it's necessary. But it's how do you say? It's a balancing, so that you're feeling comfortable. It's important to not be, to be straining or striving too hard, because the mind will really only settle once there's a relaxation there. You can't bludgeon your mind into submission. It's not going to work. You really need to allow it to settle, and then attending very mindfully, sustaining that quality of awareness. It's the quality of awareness and the continuity of awareness that allows the mind to settle, allows the mind to become peaceful. It's not the imposing of a concept of your idea of peacefulness on the mind. It's not going to work. So it's the just relaxing into that, learning how to pay attention. Experiencing experiencing the whole body. You know, the breath is the what we attend to on a, say, like a, in a focused way, but in general, that sense of what's the whole body feeling like? Is it nice and straight? Is it balanced? What are the different feelings that come up as one experiencing in the body the different feelings? Maybe, you know, where do we experience anxiety, worry in the body? Where do we feel it? What's it make the body feel like? What does particular kind of desire that comes up? You know, where do we feel that? What's the body feel like? What the experience in the body of ill will, aversion? Where do we feel that? What's it feel like? So that the body is a very it's a very clear measure of our mental states. We can, if we become more and more attentive, you realize that the, you know, the different mental states and moods that we have, those are experienced in the body, and we can relax around that, and you can start to, as you become more familiar and understand, oh, when I feel like that, when my body's tensing like this, when my body's, when my abdomen's getting tight like that, well, that's anxiety, that's fear, or that's worry, sort of that feeling in the chest like that, or whenever there's that sort of kind of agitation in the body, a sort of movement towards getting something, you know, consuming anything. Usually we're actually not very discerning. It's just sort of, you know, whatever is the flavor of the moment, we're quite okay with. I mean, it's sort of, so but then seeing, that's a repeated pattern of how desire keeps playing itself out in the way that the body is. So that recognizing how that works, and then tuning into it, so that the one is understanding. That's the feeling in the body, and then you can. One, it gives you a clue, because usually what happens in the mind is that, yes, there's a particular fear or desire or aversion, but the mind is so quick that it goes right into a story very quickly. It's got its justifications. It's got its you know, you wouldn't think it if it wasn't right. I mean, of course, you know, we've all got ourselves into trouble with that. You know, of course, you know, we believe it over and over again. So that the tuning into it on how it's felt in the body, you can go to it without the story. And that's where you can resolve it, or to allow it to pass through. And again, where the breath is, okay, I recognize that feeling. And that's, you know, and the mind is going to be at least whispering, probably screaming the story at the time. But sort of keep coming to the body. It's okay. And then, okay, relaxing that, attending to it, letting that go. So it's just, it's very, very simple, but it's very freeing, it's very liberating, to not be trapped in the stories. And because it cascades then, the feelings and the stories start to cascade. So that by simplifying it, coming back to the bodily sensation, feeling in the body, and then the breath is that anchor, the breath coming in, the breath going out. The in-breath, you know, soothing, nurturing, warming, energizing. The out-breath, releasing, relaxing, expanding. That feeling of, okay, that one can tap into that feeling and allow the moods and impressions to dissipate. And one is grounded in awareness in the present moment. And one can, you know, sometimes one has to deal with physical pain, mental distress. And those are very real experiences. But still, we've got the breath, which is always—it's always neutral. Mm-hmm. And there, the breath is a neutral base to return to. And the breath coming, so you can say, experiencing some physical pain. And so, okay, can I relax around it? Can I? Is this physical pain? You know, is it something that is that I'm exacerbating through this, or is it something that maybe there's an illness? Can I actually do anything about it? So that too, within that sphere of awareness and the neutral quality of the breath, one can be present with that pain. And then if something needs to be done, one can do it. If not, then one can allow that sense of not complicating the pain. Because sometimes everyone can be say the actual physical pain can be bearable, but it's the sort of the mental pain of, I don't like it, I don't want to be here, it shouldn't be this way, why me? One can actually, that's we really spin ourselves out with that, and that's where a lot of pain is. And then the actual physical pain is much more bearable then. So those are, you know, just separating these different experiences out. And it's the separation isn't just an intellectual analysis of it. It's on an experiential level, by having an anchor of the breath coming in, the breath going out, grounded in the body, relaxed and settled within the body, one is able to use one's discernment. And the word that is usually translated as wisdom in Buddhism is probably a much better, probably translated better as discernment, as using an ability to discern, okay, what's useful, what's not useful right now, what's going to lead to peace, what's going to lead to agitation, and really being able to discern, looking and seeing. One is able to recognize, okay, this is a course of action to follow. So this mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of the body, these are anchors for our practice, and they're anchors for the cultivation of loving kindness, in the sense of the just that ability to be present with one in-breath and one out-breath is a tremendous kindness to oneself. The ability to be with the body, to be non-reactive, non-judgmental, that's an act of kindness in the present moment. That being very attentive. This is the, I say, laying the foundations for that quality of loving kindness. And, you know, that plays itself out in our action, how it's manifested. There's a very lovely discourse where it's actually Sariputta goes to pay respects to the Buddha to take leave. He has to take leave and would like to go off on a sort of a wandering journey. And the Buddha gives his permission and he leaves to go and get himself ready, prepared to leave. And then another monk comes to the Buddha after and says he had a grudge against Sariputta, and said, that Sariputta, he hit me and left the monastery. And the Buddha then sort of sent word to one of the other monks and said, bring Sariputta here. And there's been an accusation against him. Which is also, I mean, that's interesting in itself in the sense of the way that the Buddha dealt with sort of issues and whatnot. Sort of, he didn't sort of just dismiss the monk and say, Sariputta wouldn't do that, you know, forget it. I said, okay, bring Sariputta here, do it, and resolve this sort of face to face. So then Sariputta is brought back, and the Buddha gives the, so this is the accusation that this monk made against you. And Sariputta's reply was very interesting in that he said to the effect of that, you know, having developed mindfulness of the body for so long, it is impossible to engage in unskillful action. The mind is well established in sort of similar to the chant that we did this morning, sort of abundant, measureless, sort of, you know, expansive. That's the nature. It's impossible to have done that. And then he gives all sorts of illustrations of the different ways that is contemplated, developed mindfulness of the body and the effect of it being that the mind is always in a place of awareness and well-wishing, of compassion towards all beings. It's impossible to have harmed anybody. And the Sariputta is extraordinarily skilled in giving illustrations and teachings. There's many different ways that he explained it. And finally, the monk who made the accusation sort of finally got up and said, I've been really extraordinarily foolish, and I made a false accusation against Sariputta. May he forgive me. And the Buddha's response is, yes, you have been foolish and made a false accusation, but recognizing your faults and seeing, wanting to make amends, that is growth in this Dhamma and discipline. And he turns to Sariputta and says, Sariputta, forgive this foolish man before his head splits in seven pieces. and Sariputta says, yes, well, I certainly forgive him, and may he forgive me for anything. So it's a lovely exchange. But it's interesting how I thought it was very interesting how Sariputta's immediate response was, somebody who has cultivated mindfulness of the body for as long as I have and is so grounded in it couldn't possibly give rise to unwholesome states and is well established in the quality of loving kindness and compassion. It's not, it's just not within the purview to be able to do that. So those are some reflections on mindfulness of the body, getting a base. Perhaps what we could do now is we could go and do some walking meditation and then come back about 10 o'clock for a sitting. Of course, walking meditation is not really any different than sitting, in the sense of the, when you're sitting, you're watching your breath. When you're doing walking meditation, still paying attention to the whole body, but the main focus, primary focus, is on the, say, the rhythm of the step. You're pacing, walking a bit slower than normal, generally, walking a bit slower, or however, whatever feels comfortable for establishing mindfulness, but just paying attention to that sensation of the, say, with the foot, your right foot, touching, rising, moving, setting that foot down, left foot coming up, moving, setting it down, just that pace. Paying attention to the rhythm of the walking, the sensation of touching the ground, movement of the foot, and then also of the whole body. What's my whole posture like? It's not just disembodied feet touching the pavement. It's the whole body connecting with the rhythm of the walking, so that paying attention to the posture, holding one's hands clasped in front, usually, could be in back, but usually in front is a bit more comfortable, just so that one isn't, there's a certain composure to the posture. Eyes downcast so that one's walk, you know, one's gaze is in front of one about 6 feet, and then about 20, 25, 30 paces. It's about appropriate, whichever is comfortable. And then one gets to the end of the path, you turn around, and it's really helpful just to stop for a minute, just to check and see, okay, am I here? Am I still present? Am I still with the walking? Then to continue the walking, and to, at the end of the path, just to stop for a minute, because it's easy for when the body is walking, for the mind to wander off as well. So just connect, making sure one is sustaining that connection with the posture and the continuity of mindfulness.
Okay. Yeah.